We're holding the bottom of page 2 in the Mishnayos Zeroyim section. The top of the page is Masechet Pei of Ma'akalayim, Ois Dalim. So the first Mishnah, Masechet Kalayim, the Mishnah starts by talking about different species in general. We know the Torah says you're not allowed to plant two species of vegetables or grains together, or cross-graft trees, etc. But you have various kinds of subspecies which are considered close enough, they're closely related enough that they're not kalayim one with another. So the Mishnah starts by listing a few of them. Hachitim v'hazunin en kalayim zebezeh. Wheat and zunin. Zunin is a plant that grows similarly to wheat, and it often grows as a weed in wheat fields. In English, it's called darnel. But the difference is the seeds of it are not edible. In fact, they're mildly poisonous. The Yerushalmi mentions that the only reason they even the concept of kalayim would even come for them is because they are sometimes used as bird seed. So therefore, they're relevant to kalayim, but they're considered close enough to wheat that ein kalayim zebezeh. Now, what is this Mishnah doing here in Ein Yaakov, where we're supposed to be dealing with Agadta? So Akosev, the compiler of Ein Yaakov, points out that the Rosh explains, based on the Yerushalmi and based on a Medrash, that Zunin is actually a degenerate kind of wheat. It goes back to the Medrash says at the end of Parashas Bereishis that in the time of the Dirt HaMabul, when everybody was acting corruptly and mating with people and even with animals that they're not supposed to, and even the animals were cross mating when they weren't supposed to. So Hashem caused that also at that time the earth started producing the wrong things. So you'd plant wheat, and instead of wheat, you'd have this zunin, you'd have this darnel grow, and similarly with other species. So we see from that, in other words, that it is considered a species of wheat. And therefore, the lesson from it is, in other words, that when people misbehave, then the Eibishter makes it that even the natural world starts acting up and doesn't function the way that it's supposed to. But the point is that since it's considered a subspecies of wheat, then therefore it's not colliding with wheat. Similarly, barley and oats, hakusmin bashifun, and spelt and rye, and in kalayim zebezeh, not kalayim with one another. The Yerushalmi explains that each of these is a pair. In other words, you can't mix and match across the pairs. We're not saying that all these things, saurim shibolas shul, kusmin and shifun, are not kalayim. It means that each one is not kilayim with the one that's together with it in a pair. Sa'urim v'shibodos shu'al are not kilayim, but sa'urim with everything else would be. Hakosman v'ashifan are not kilayim one with another, but any other ones would be, and so forth. And the Mishnah goes on to list the same kind of things with various kinds of fruits and vegetables and animals and whatnot. On to Masechta Shavuos. So most of Masechta Shavuos, of course, talks about the dinim of Shemitah. The last parak of it talks about the dinim of Shemitas Ksofim, which is the Torah tells us that all loans are forgiven in Shemitah year. The Alter Rebbe points out that most poskim learn that the Shemitah of it only takes place at the end of the year, that only throughout the Shemitah year you'd fully be allowed to collect the Chayv. Only when it comes the end of Shemitah, then the loan is canceled unless you make a prosbul, as it describes over there in the Mishnayos. The Alter Rebbe brings, though, from Tosfos HaRosh, that even from the beginning of the year, you're not allowed to be asking for the loan back. The loan is not canceled, per se, at that point, but you're still not allowed to demand payment of it throughout the whole year of Shemitah. And then comes the end of Shemitah, if the guy hasn't paid it back, then the loan is gone. Which is why we have, the Alter Rebbe says, that's why there's the idea to make a prosbul at the beginning of Shemitah year and at the end of Shemitah year, which is what we do. We do it out of Rosh Hashanah of the year before Shemitah, as well as the year of Shemitah, in order to be yotze both of those opinions. Anyway, the Mishnah says, if the borrower is returning a loan during Shemitah, or after Shemitah, as the case may be, the lender has to tell him that I'm forgiving the loan, assuming there was no prosbul, then the lender has to tell him, I'm forgiving the loan, and you don't have to pay it back. And if the borrower says, nevertheless, I want you to accept it, you kabel mimenu, then the, then, then, uh, then, then the lender is allowed to accept the money from him. Shenema v'zed dvar ha-shmittah, because the pasuk says this is the word of the shmittah, meaning as long as he said the word that he said that I am moichel this this loan, then the fact that the guy wants to offer it, then you're allowed to accept it from him. In fact, the Rosh brings over here from a Gemara in Gittin that talks about from a Gemara in Gittin that says that the toli lay, that he literally toli means to hang, until he says that, and there are actually different understandings of what that means. One understanding means that the malva can keep on nudging the guy. Toli literally means like he's hanging his eyes on him, like keep on staring at him until he says alpha pk, nevertheless I want to give it to you. And then you can accept it. And the Yerushalmi, he brings from the Yerushalmi, that goes further, that you can even say, forgive it. But really, meanwhile, you have your hands stuck out, that you fully expect it back. You're allowed to do that because the Iker is the Torah wants you to say the words. A very interesting thing, the Bach actually in Shulchan Aruch, brings another possible meaning of the tolile from Rashi on that sugya and Gittin, that tolile actually means literally to hang him. So it means literally you can pressure the guy even by hanging him up on the wall or something until he says I'll pay it back. And the Bach says if a person wants to follow that Rashi and do that, then fine, he's a Zoriz Venisco, then he tack a gains because he ends up getting back his loan, even if he didn't make a prosable. The Alter Rebbe doesn't mention the whole point in Hilchos Halva, but maybe because the Alter Rebbe is stressing over there the point, just make a prosable, and then you don't have the whole issue anyway. On the other hand, the Rambam says that you have to be careful. The guy must not be saying that I'm giving it back as a payment of a loan. You have to get him somehow, pressure him in one or another of these ways to say that he's giving it to you as a gift, and then you can accept it. So you can have your hands stuck out, you can pressure him, you can whatever, but it can't be that he's actually saying I'm paying back a loan, because you have to tell him the loan is, in fact, there's no loans after Shemitah unless there was a prosable. The Mishnah continues, Kayotzeboy, in a similar vein, the same way as we're saying over here that all you have to do is say the words, and then though ideally, and then though you hope that the guy will in fact pay you back. So in a similar vein, Ritzeach Shagolo Le'irmiklote, if a Ritzeach goes into Golos to an Irmiklot after he killed somebody, V'rotzu Anshe Irlechabdoy, and the people of the city want to honor him, they want to appoint him to some position, he has to tell them, I am a Ritzeach, and therefore you shouldn't be honoring me. Omru loy af pikein, if they tell him, nevertheless, we still want you to accept the honor, yukabel mehem, then he can accept the honor from them. For the same reason, shenema v'zed dvar haritzeach, because again, the Torah used the word dvar in this connection, the word of the ritzeach should be such and such. So once he says the dover, then that's good enough. Then that's good enough. The Rosh brings over here something that the Rosh brings over here something from the Yerushalmi on this that says, in the same vein, just like we're saying over here, that the person is obligated to speak up and tell them that there's something the matter with him, that he's a Ritzeach. In the same vein, the Yerushalmi says, if you have a person who's familiar with one Masechta and he travels to a place where they don't know who he is, and they think that he knows two Masechtas, he has to actually inform them, no, I actually only know the one. He shouldn't allow them to think of him more than what he is. And then the Mishnah continues over there, Hamach Zuchoy V'Shvias, if a person does pay back a loan during or after Shemitah, even though it was already canceled, Ruach Chachamim Noichahemenu, the spirit of the Chachamim is pleased with him. In other words, he's doing the right thing and the Chachamim approve of what he's doing, because this way, Ion Yaakov points out this way, Shalatino Delos Bifnei Loivin. This way, you don't lock the door in the future in front of people who want to come and borrow money. You're going to have the whole reason the Mishnah explains why Hillel had to make prosable was because you had people who were saying, you know what, the loan's going to be canceled by Shemitah, so I'm not going to bother lending money. And then they were over on a mitzvah in the Torah that says you're not allowed to do that. So now, when a person goes and voluntarily, even without a prosable, goes and pays back the loan, pays it as a gift, as we said before, then the Chachamim are pleased with that, because now that makes it that more people will be willing in the future to do the mitzvah and the Torah of him, Kesef Tal Ve'Asami, to lend a fellow Yid money and not worry about that Shemitah will cancel it.
is the reason why did Shmita to cancel the Chachila? Why was there behind that? What's the reason?
Well, the reason is the Torah wants to give a person a break. You have to realize that. Most people in the times of Tanakh were farmers. So it's not like they're borrowing money, for example, in order to establish a business or something. If they were borrowing money, most of the time it would be they were having a hard time. They fell behind on their rent or on their taxes or who knows what. They had extra expenses or whatever, and therefore they need a loan to tide them over. So the idea was supposed to be that it's partially a form of gemilas hasadim. The Rambam lists it as one of the highest levels of tzedakah is to lend a person money and get him back on his feet. You have where Rashi mentions in Parshas Bahar, Vechzak the boy, that you have the marshal over there, where, like you have, for example, before an animal has fallen down, when an animal is carrying a heavy burden, if you grab it before it actually fell down, then you, one person alone, will be able to keep it up. But once it falls down, it's going to take five people to pick it up and get it back on its feet. The same way, you have a person is having a hard time making ends meet. You lend him some money, so therefore, and it allows him to get back on his feet. So the Torah wanted, the Eibishter wanted and expected that people will live up to this, that you'll be moichel them the loan after Shemitah. That way, they have a fresh start. They don't have this debt weighing around their necks. And on the other hand, the Torah is also expecting that if the person is capable of paying it back, that he'll come after Shemitah and say, "I want to pay it back." Eventually, and it lasted a long time, only in Hillel's times, which is well over 1,000 years after the Torah was given, only then did Hillel start seeing that there's a problem, that yeah, people are not willing to lend money because it's going to get canceled during Shemitah, and people weren't paying back enough. Could be times were hard economically, whatever it was, and that's when he made the concept of a prosbul. Bechlal, the Gemara discusses in Gittin over there, how does he have the ability even to override a din of the Torah? If the Torah says that it's canceled by Shemitah, how does he have the right to override it? And the Gemara gives two answers, Machlokas Abaye and Rav over there. One is that it's a matter of Hefker based in Hefker. And the other answer is that in Hillel's times, Shemitah and Shemitah's Ksofim was only Dirabbanan because not all the Jews had returned to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis Mikdash. So the point was that for hundreds of years before that, the system worked well. The system worked the way the Eibishter designed it, that people, rich people, will lend poor people money, and they will be willing to forgive the loans when necessary. You actually have, by the way, in Sefer Nehemiah portion of Sefer Ezra, actually, and then Nehemiah tells over there what was going on at his times, the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash. There was a problem like that. You had a lot of poor Jews who had borrowed money from richer Jews for these kinds of things, to pay their taxes or different other things that they couldn't afford. And now they're saying we're getting into a worse and worse situation. We're going to end up having to sell our children as slaves, etc. And Nehemiah goes and convinces the rich Jews. He says, "I'm going to do this myself, and I want you all to join me with this, that we're going to make a general amnesty of all their loans." And everybody agreed. And that way, again, so it was a similar idea. The Shemitah Ksofim, that this way a person could get back on his feet and not have to have that choiv hanging around his neck. But nevertheless, the Mishnah is saying that still, if a person does go and pay it back, then Ruach Chachamim Noichaymenu, because then he makes it that more people will be willing to lend money in the future. Minadin, he'd be Potter after Shemitah. Yeah. That's the point, right? So, yeah. Although, again, based on what the Bach was saying before, maybe to a certain extent he could force him. He has to say Meshamatani, but maybe then to a certain extent he's able to force him to say Alpha PK, nevertheless, I want to pay it back to you.
That's the thing.
According to the way the Bach is learning it, it sounds like the way he's learning the Rashi over there in Gittin, it sounds like the lender has the ability, even though on the one hand he has to say Neshamat Ani, on the other hand he actually has the ability to force the guy to say Afal Pike, nevertheless I want to pay it to you. So the expression in the Gemara over there is the toli lay So that's the thing. One explanation of the toli lay can mean that he stands there waiting expectantly. But the other explanation the Bach brings is that toli literally means he can hang him up. He can grab him by the back of his shirt and hang him up on a wall or something until the guy is willing to do it. Can't take him to base then or nothing. Yeah, but yeah. Okay. Masechta Maisa Sheni, so most of the Masechta talks about the Dinim of Maisa Sheni. The fifth parak of it, so the last parak of it, starts about talking. Now we know Maisa Sheni you have to take to your Shalayim and eat it over there, and you have certain rules about how you can eat it, as the Mishnah, as the Mishnayas are going to go on to say. And then you also have the Torah, or we know the Torah tells us if you have too much of it and it's not going to make it to your Yerushalayim, then you exchange it for money and you take the money to your Yerushalayim and use it to buy food over there. Now, you have a similar kind of thing. The Torah says, as far as neter avai, the first 3 years of a tree, the fruit of his orla, the fourth of it is neter avai, and you have the same, and you have similar dinim as far as that you have to take it to your shalim. So therefore, in Masechta Maaseh Sheni, it also deals with those dinim. So the Mishnah starts off, kerem revai, a vineyard of revai of the fourth year. And by the way, the Yerushalmi brings that and also there's a Bavli and Brachas that discusses that there were different versions that were going around among the Amoraim, whether the proper word over here is kerem revai or neta revai. Do these dinim apply strictly to a vineyard, or do they apply to neta, to any kind of young tree that produces fruit? The halacha is neta revai, the halacha is it does apply to all trees. The first 3 years is orla, the fourth year is revai. Anyway, the Mishnah says, Kerem Revai, Mitzayin Oseh B'Kzuzis Adam. They mark around the edges of it with clods of dirt. Most of the Mephoshim explain that Kzuzis means like large balls or large chunks of dirt. The Aruch brings an explanation that Kzuzis means pieces of red dirt, I guess, because that kind of would stand out better. What's the point of marking it? The point is, people need to know it's neter revai or kerem revai. They shouldn't eat from it unless they take it to Yerushalayim or unless they exchange it for money. So therefore you mark it like that. Why are you using earth? So the Bavli in Bava Kamma that gives one reason, and then the Yerushalmi here on Maaseh Sheni gives a different reason. So let's learn the three of them first. Let's learn the three things in the Mishnah first, and then we'll talk about the different reasons that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi give. Vishal Orla, a field or an orchard of Orla, where it's still during the first 3 years, you mark it b'chausis. You mark it around the edges by putting chausis, which is ground up earthenware, or the Rambam describes it over here, titasoruf, burnt clay. So like you'd take, normally you fire clay to make earthenware of it. Here you would have, it's broken up into little pieces, and they would use that to mark the edges of an orla orchard. Vishal kvoris b'sid. And if you have a field that has graves in it, and you want to be, you need people to stay away so they don't become tame, then you mark it with sid, which is lime or plaster. It's white. So you dissolve it in water. You dissolve it in water and you pour it around the edges of the field. There's a Gemara in the Bavli and Moed Cotton and a Yerushalmi here and in Shkolim that describe a lot of the halachas of it and the details of it. And then the Rambam, it's in Hilchos Tumas Mes, I think. Anyway, so why are you using Davka these three things? So the Bavli in Bava Kamma explains like this: when it comes to an orchard or a vineyard of revai, it's only going to be what you do is you can have hana from it. You have restrictions on it. You have to take it to your shalayim or you have to exchange it for money. Therefore, we use earth, which you can also have hana from. You plow up the earth and you plant in it, and things will grow in it. Therefore, you use earth to symbolize that. On the other hand, charsis, ground up earthenware or ground up bricks or whatever, if you plant something in it, it won't grow, or at least it won't grow very well. Therefore, you use that for orla to symbolize the same way as orla. You can't have anah from the same way the charsis, you don't really have much anah from it either. Then a field that has graves, the graves having them bones, which are white. Therefore, you use sid, you use lime, which is also white. And then to mark the edges. Those are the reasons the Bavli gives. The Yerushalmi mentions a different point, that each one of them, how long will it last? Earth, clods of earth that you have around the edges of the field aren't going to last very long. Fine, well, the issue of Kerem Revai doesn't last that long either. It's only for 1 year. And even within that year, it's not like the entire year you have grapes on the vines or fruits on the trees or whatever. So therefore, you can have something that will only last short term and it's fine. Orla, which lasts 3 years, you need something longer lasting. Charsis will last longer, therefore you use that. Graves, which are also permanently, because once you have a grave over there, it's going to be tomei forever. So you want to use lime or plaster over there, which is going to last much longer. So therefore, that's the reason for it. And the Mishnah continues, when does all this apply that you should mark the fields of these different kinds is only during Shmita. Because Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, the Gemara in Bava Kamma, the Bavli in Bava Kamma explains that Rav Shimon Gamliel says, during Shmita, everybody is allowed into all the fields and orchards and they can pick whatever fruit they want. So therefore, you have to alert them, hey, this one is Revai, treat it with certain dinim. This one is Urla, it's off limits to you, etc. But the rest of the years, nobody has any business going into your field or your orchard anyway. So the Gemara uses the expression of halitayu l'rosha v'yomus. Feed the rosha, the food, and let him die. In other words, we don't care if the guy is already being over on an iser of gezel and he's walking into your orchard to take fruit. You're entitled to not alert him that this is osir, and therefore that he's going to be chayev, whatever it is going to be chayev for eating it, because that's not your problem. He has no business being there in the first place. So what's the hurrah from this Mishnah in that's being brought over here in Ein Yaakov? So our Kosev points out a couple of things. First of all, we see from this that you should put warnings in order to warn people not to come to do averes. So you, as the owner of the orchard or the vineyard, are responsible to put out something to alert people that this is also and they shouldn't eat it. In the same way with other things like that in life. On the other hand, we're saying that when you have a person who's ready to steal, then there's no takana for him. Once he starts getting into that, then he's going to end up doing other kinds of averus as well. And therefore, you can't be responsible to stop him from those other averus. You have to work on him to do tshuva for the gezel, and then he'll be able to do tshuva for the other things. Then he brings something from the rosh. From the Rosh, who in turn says, based on the Yerushalmi learns, where do we know this concept that you have to mark these places anyway? In particular, the Yerushalmi discusses, where do we know this concept that you have to mark a field that has graves in it? And the Yerushalmi brings in that connection, the Pasuk by Mitzora, the Tomei Yikra, one of the meanings of it is, the Tomei himself has to call out that he is Tomei. So when a person or a thing is Tomei, you have to put up notices or you have to alert people that it is Tomei. So that's another lesson we learn from this then, that when a person, similar to what we said just before about the Ritzeach, is you have to inform people about your shortcomings so that they should know to take appropriate steps. Okay. Later on in that parak, it starts talking about the dinim of vidui meiser. So you have like this. We know the Torah. You have truma, you have meiser rishon, you have meiser sheni, and then some years instead of meiser sheni, you have meiser on. There's psukim in Parshas Re'eh and in Parshas Kisavai that imply the redarshan from those psukim that it doesn't have to be when you separate your truma and meiser that you give them to the kohen and the levi and the oni and so forth right away. You can store them up in your barn or in your silo or whatever, and then there comes a point when you have to then give them out and then dispose of them and make sure that they go to all the appropriate parties. So the previous Mishnayos earlier in the parak deal with the details of that. Then what you do is once you've done all that, so the time to do that then is you have to have done that by Pesach of the fourth year and Pesach of the seventh year. So the Gemara explains that the idea being that it's supposed to be the time, it should be the time when all of the crop is gone from the field. But on the other hand, we have a pasuk that implies that it takes place at a yomtiv. So Sukkot is too early. There are still crops growing in the fields. The time when the crops are pretty much gone from the fields is Hanukkah time. But that's not a yomtiv, at least not Daraisa. Therefore, the next yomtiv, Daraisa, that comes up is Pesach. So therefore, Pesach is the time of beer. And we learn that it's the Pesach after the third year and after the sixth year, after the years of Maaser Ani, so therefore it's Pesach of the fourth year and the seventh year. So at that point, you have to do beer Maaseris. You make sure that all the Truma has been given to the Koyanim, the Maaserish to the Levim, the Maaser Ani to the Aniim, and so on and so forth. And then you say the declaration, you say the declaration that it says in Parashat Tisabe, Vidri Maaser. So the Mishnah says, "B'mincha b'yomtiv achron hoyim misvadim." On mincha of the last day of Pesach, this is in Eretz Yisrael we're talking about. So Shvi Shal Pesach hoyim misvadim is when you would say vidri meiser. This is, by the way, the reason. Now you actually have different gersois when the actual beer took place. In an earlier Mishnah in the Perek, when it says that you had a deadline by which you have to do the beer, there are different gersois whether it's the first day of Pesach or whether it's the erev of the last day of Pesach, so it would be the sixth day of Pesach. So that's actually connected with that. Is a reason why you have there's the haftarah of Va'orva, which the Velt does it every Shabbos HaGadol, And our minhag is we do it only in Shabbos HaGadol when it comes out on Erev Pesach, and then you actually have the minhag of the Vilna Gaon, which is the other way around. Davka, you say it in a year when Erev Pesach is not on Shabbos. A big part of that has to do with the fact that Haftorah talks about this concept of Bir Maisris. Malachi, the Navi, is telling the Jewish people, Havirus Kala Maisa Besa Oitzer, bring all your Maisris, all your outstanding Maisris, to the treasure house in the Beis HaMikdash, from which it will be distributed to the Kohenim and Leviim. Of Chonuni Nabazois, you can test me with this. So therefore, there's the idea that it's connected with Pesach, as we're saying over here. So the meaning of the Velt is they say it regardless, whenever date Shabbos HaGadol comes out, because also in there you have Hine Anoche Shalech, Lachane Se the Yohan Navi, so it connects with the Gola Amitis Vashle. So it connects with the Gola of Pesach. On Minig, as we say it, Davka, when Erev Pesach is on Erev Shabbos, because according to one Girsa over here, the last day for the beer is Erev Pesach. So therefore, so that's the day. So Erev Pesach then would be the appropriate time to say that Haftorah. And the Vilna Gaon's Shitta is Fakert. If Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbos, you can't do the beer that day. You have to finish it the day before. Therefore, Davka, when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, you don't do that Haftorah. You do the regular parasha of the week Haftorah, and only when it comes out on a different day do you do that. Anyway. So now, either way, according to the various Gersois, whether you do it before Pesach or whether you do it before the end of Pesach, either way, the actual vidui takes place on Shvi Shal Pesach. Ketz and Hoya vidui. How did the vidui go? The person starts saying, "Be out the Akhlid." So the Mishnah is going to quote over here the Psukim and explain them phrase by phrase what each phrase in the Pesach represents. First, the person says, "Be out the Kodesh min Abayis." I've removed all the Kodesh from the house. So what does the word Kodesh refer to? Zemaisa Sheni, the Netter Ravai. So that refers to, he's saying that I've gotten rid of all the Maisa Sheni and the Netter Ravai. Udiyu Mishnayis described that if he hadn't brought them to Yerushalayim by that time, then he's going to have to destroy them. So that's literally be out. I've destroyed them. And they're called Kodesh. Both Maisa Sheni and Netter Ravai are called Kodesh in various circuits. Then he continues, Vagam Nesativ La Levi. He says, I've given it to the Levi. What's the it? Is that my Levi? That means my tradition, which is given to the Levi. When he says Vagam Nesativ, he doesn't just say I gave, he says also I gave. So the word Vagam also includes Zutrumo, Trumas Meiser, includes also that he's saying that I gave the Truma and the Trumas Meiser to the Kohen. When it continues, he continues that I gave to the Levi, and he continues like Ger La Yosef La Amona, that I also gave to the Ger and to the orphan and to the widow. Zemaisa Oni Halekat Hashit Chavapeya. That refers to that he's acknowledging that he took out and then gave away the Maisa Oni and Leket to Chicha and Peya that had been stored by him all these years. Now, even though it is true that not giving the leket shitchan peah does not prevent him from doing the vidui, the other ones, yes, if he doesn't give his truma or he doesn't give his maaser or whatever, then he can't say the vidui maaser because all of those are ma'akiv. If he didn't give the leket shitchan peah, it's not ma'akiv. Mefoshim explained the reason is because by those, the Torah doesn't use the word nesina. It doesn't say you should give them. It says tazo, you should leave them for the poor people. So if he didn't actually give it, then he could still say vidui maaser, because he was saying v'gam nesativ, and those things don't really require nesiv. Anyway, min habayis zuchale, he continues in the pasuk that he continues bi'arti hakodesh min habayis. The min habayis comes to include zuchala, that he's also saying that he gave any chala that he still had stored up by him, that he gave that to the kohen as well. By the way, Iyun Yaakov points out an interesting point. Why are we calling this vidui maaser? So, okay, you could say the word vidui means to acknowledge. He's acknowledging that he gave away all his maaser. But still, it's kind of a funny expression. Usually vidui means I did something wrong, and I'm acknowledging that to Hashem and asking mechila. What's that over here? So Iyun Yaakov says, at the end, the Mishnah is going to quote that when he finishes the vidui maaser, he says the pasuk Ashkifa Mamod Kodshifa, where we're asking Hashem, just like we did what's incumbent on us, you should do what's incumbent on you. So therefore, in effect, he's saying that he did all these mitzvahs, shaloi l'shma. Now it is true, Iyun Yaakov goes on to say, with maaser you're allowed to do that. Those psukim from Malachi that we were just saying, say, Uchanuni no bezais. Hashem says, test me with it and you'll see that I'll bring for you bracha ad lidah. So you are allowed to do that. But nevertheless, he's still saying vidui. He's still saying, after all, I recognize that I was doing it not completely the Shem Shemayim, but rather to test Hashem. He should give us brachas, and therefore, in that sense, we can call it vidui.
Also, how does a leket shicha and peah end up in his house?
So the same idea would be, for example, that he gathered up. So So you could have, for example, there was Leket Shitkan Peah left in the field, which the Anim didn't come to gather. So now the truth is there does come, and Masechta Peah talks about, there does come a point in the season when if all this time it's been lying over there and the Anim didn't take it, then you're allowed to keep it for yourself. But Piyuba Pashtus, we're talking about the person didn't wait that long. He gathered it up sooner than that and brought it into his barn and figured at some point I'll give it to the Anim. So now we're saying he has to make sure to give that out when at the proper time.
At some point he could take it.
So no, we're not saying that he could. We're saying,
at some point.
So I'm saying there is a point late in the season. The Mishnah describes it in Peah. Mishnah Yochanan Namushos, once you have the Namushos, which there's a couple of different explanations what that means, have gone through the field and they haven't collected it, then anything that's left is considered hefker and you can take it. What we're talking about, in other words, that the person, let's say, didn't wait that late in the season. He gathered it up prematurely and brought it into his barn. Then, yeah. Okay. Next Mishnah continues. And then he continues. He says that I did k'chol mitzvoscha asher tzivisani, according to all your mitzvahs that you commanded me. So we learn from that. Hoyim hikdim ma'aser sheni l'rishon. We learn from that if he gave ma'aser sheni before ma'aser rishon, which in that he was over on an isur, because the Torah says malayas chabadima chalos acher. You're supposed to give them matanis in order. Then any yocholos vandis, then he would not be able to say the vidri ma'aser, because then he can't say I did k'chol mitzvoscha asher tzivisani. Then he continues. By the way, the Rambam explains over here in his Pirush, it doesn't mean the person is not saying all of this that it says in the Mishnah. He's not saying the Arti Hakodesh Min Abayis Zemais Sheni Minetzuravai. He's not saying Lo Yavarti Min Mitzvasecha Lo Yifrashi Min Al Sheni Minet. The Mishnah is explaining the meaning behind each of these phrases that he's saying. So he continues, Lo Yavarti Min Mitzvasecha. When he says I didn't transgress any of your mitzvahs, that means Lo Yifrashi Min Al Sheni Minet. I didn't separate from one species on another species, truma or maaser, which you're not allowed to do. You're not yotze that way. I didn't separate from produce that was already harvested, that was detached from the ground on behalf of produce that's still attached to the ground, or the other way around, from what's attached and what's detached. Because again, you're not yotze that way. That's not valid truma or maaser. I also didn't separate truma or maaser from the new crop of this year on behalf of the old crop of last year, or vice versa. Each year you have to give truma and maaser from that year's crop, not from a different year's. And for that reason, you have a whole gemaras in different places that discuss, in Rosh Hashanah is one particular one, that discusses the details of at what point does a year end and a year begin for the various kinds of produce. Where we just had Chamish HaAsar B'Shvat. When we say it's Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos, that's one of the relevances of it for that is as far as whether certain kinds of fruits, do they belong to one year or do they belong to the next year? For many of them, for certain fruits, the cutoff point is Chamish HaAsar B'Shvat. It's also relevant as far as Orla and other genium. Anyway, he continues, V'loi shachachti, he continues, I didn't forget. That means he's saying, V'loi shachachti, milavarecha, v'malahaz yoshim cha'olav, I've not forgotten to say bracha and to mention your name over the truma and ma'aser that I took. Now, brachas are actually dirabonim. But nevertheless, the chachamim were masmechit, they use this pasuk as an asmachta for the concept of brachas on mitzvahs. But maybe even before the Chachamim came up with the formal brachas, maybe there would be the idea that a person was still expected to thank Hashem somehow in his own words that Hashem gave him these mitzvahs. Then he continues, next Mishnah, Loi ochalti ba'oni mimenu. The person says in Vidri Meiser, I did not eat in my oini, which is Meloshin Aninus, from it, meaning specifically the Meiser Sheni, and that's one of the dinim of Meiser Sheni, which is describes Uriyur the Masechta, is you're not allowed to eat Meiser Sheni when you're in a state of Aninus. So a person's relative has passed away, Midaraisa, only that day or until the burial, whichever comes first, is he an Oinen, Midarabonon, even the following night he's an Oinen, but in any case, when he's an Oinen, he's not allowed to eat Ma'aser Sheni, the Gemara in Yevamos learns it from Sukkim. So now, Hoyim Ochaban Ninus, Eni Ochal Isvadis. So if he ate Ma'aser Sheni while he was an Oinen, then now he would not be able to be Mesvada, he wouldn't be able to say this Vidri Ma'aser because he didn't keep the mitzvahs that apply to it. He continues, V'loi bi'auti mimenu b'tomei, he says, I didn't use it up in Tomei, Hoim Frisha Batuma. From here we learn that if he had separated the Ma'aser Sheni while he was Tomei, and thereby he made it Tomei by touching it, in Yochalei Zvadis, then also he can't be Mismada because again he didn't fulfill the mitzvah the way it's supposed to be. There was included in that a few different things, actually. There was that he's not allowed to separate it when it's tamei. There's also he's not allowed to eat it when either he or the maaser sheni is tamei. He has to be tahor, and the maaser sheni has to be tahor. And if not, then we're saying that he can't be misvadik because he didn't do things correctly. He continues, v'lo nisati mimenu l'mes. I did not give any of it for the dead. That means lo lakachti mimenu orim v'tachricham l'mes, means he's saying I did not use any of the money of maaser sheni, or any of the produce of maaser sheni, to buy an orim or tachrichim for a dead person. Now, what's the there's a few different explanations what the point of that is. One is that even though that's a big mitzvah, nevertheless, still you're not allowed to do that. But maaser sheni food is meant to be eaten, and maaser sheni money is meant to be used dafka for purposes of eating. You're not allowed to use it for other purposes. So even though he could argue, I did it in order to, I used it in order to accomplish a mitzvah. Nevertheless, he's not allowed to do that. There's a few different other points in that as well about the chiddush of why we're mentioning orim tachrichim. One of them being there was a din earlier in the Masechta that talks about that if you did that, for example, let's say you use maaser sheni money to buy a shirt, you're not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be used for money. The din is you have a concept yoichal kenegdoi. What you do is you take an equivalent amount of money and eat that with the and then buy food with that, eat it with the kedusha of maaser sheni. But if you did an orim tachrichim, then you're not able to do that. So then that means you missed your opportunity. Anyway, he continues, also, I did not give any of the maaser sheni to other oinim, because they would be also to eat it as well. He continues, Shamait b'kol Hashem alekoy, I listened to the voice of Hashem, my God. That means, he's saying, I brought what I was supposed to the Beis HaMikdash, the Bikurim, for example, the Maaser Sheni, which had to be brought to Yerushalayim, etc. And when he says, Asisi k'chol asher tzivisoni, I've done everything that you commanded me. And that means samachti v'simachti boy. I ate the Maaser Sheni in a state of happiness, which the pasuk says on it. V'achalta lifnei Hashem alekecha v'samachta ata uvesecha. So I ate in a state of happiness v'simachti boy, and I also made other people happy by giving them some of it as well. By the way, Mefoshim explained that I think maybe that Ramban explains. I don't remember where the idea behind why did the Torah make this concept of Maaser Sheni. Yeah, one idea behind it is that this way, either the farmer himself has to visit Yerushalayim every so often, and that'll have a tremendous influence on him and bring him closer to Hashem. The pasuk, in fact, mentions that point. L'man tilmad l'yiras Hashem alekecha kol hayom. When you have to visit Yerushalayim and you have all the Talmid Chachamim over there and the Sanhedrin and the Beis Mikdash, then it has a powerful effect on your neshama. But also, they make the point: what's going to happen if a farmer has a nice sized crop? He's not going to be able to stay long enough in Yerushalayim to eat all of it. What is he going to do? Necessarily, he's going to have to give it out to other people over there. So either what will happen is this way, the Talmid Chachamim in Yerushalayim will have what to eat. Or what may even happen is the farmer may decide, you know what, let me send one of my boys or one or more of my boys to learn in the yeshivas in Yerushalayim, and I'll support them with my maaser sheni. They can eat it in Yerushalayim. And that way, every family or many families are going to have boys who learn in Yerushalayim where they're going to be the ones who teach Torah to the next generation. So now the farmer is saying that Itaka did all of that. So machti b'simachti. Then he continues. The next pasuk continues. Hashkifam amad kodshcham in Hashemayim. Look down from your holy residence from Shemayim. And by the way, Rashi mentions on the pasuk. Usually, the word hashkifa usually means looking for bad purposes, like we find by the malachim by Sdoim, by hashkifu al pnei Sdoim. They're staring at Sdoim as if we're going to destroy this place. Now we're saying that we're asking the Eibishter, even if you're looking at us in an unfriendly way, hashkifa, turn that to goodness. That hashkifa should be for good. So we're saying, "Asinu Masha Gazauta Aleinu." We did what you commanded us. Afata say Masha Yiftachtanu. You also please do what you promised us, namely, Ashkifa Gamu Vorichas Amcha Yisrael and bless your people Yisrael. Which means, what does it mean to bless the Jewish people? The Bonim Rabbanis means bless us with lots of boys and girls. Ves Hadoma, and the pasuk continues, Ves Hadoma Asher Nasata Lanu, and also bless the land that you gave us. That means Batalu Gamater, bless it with lots of dew and rain. Or with Lodis Behema and with baby animals, because those also they grow by eating the grass from the ground, so therefore they're also considered part of the bracha of Hadam. We continue at Kasher Nishbat Alav Esenu Eretz Zavas Cholav Advash, as you swore to our ancestors that will have a land flowing with milk and honey. That means Kadesh Titim, Tamba Peris, that Hashem, you should cause that there should be a flavor in the Peris. There should be an extra good flavor, an extra rich flavor in the Peris, in the schos of that we in the schos that we did everything that we're supposed to as far as the Trumas and Maisers. And in fact, you have a Mishnah at the end of Sota that says when people started getting careless with Trumas and Maisers, then the Shuman Peris, the fatness and the richness of the Peris, Taka started going away because there was that direct connection between them. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Yud Ches Shvat. So that I've talked about, it's very clear that our generation is the last generation of Golos and the first generation of Gola. And we know that because the Friedrich Rebbe in his time back in Tufshin Aleph, Tufshin Beis, started announcing La'alta L'Gola, immediate Tshuva, brings immediate Gola. And he announced Imdu Hochin Kochem, everybody should stand ready to the Kabbalah Spnei Mashiach Tzitkenu, and how much more so, decades have passed since then, so we must necessarily be the last generation of Golos and the first generation of Gola. Halachas. We started talking about the halachas of Iker and Tofel. So we said that if you have a person is eating an Iker and a Tofel, so then we say you make a bracha on the Iker and you don't make a bracha on the Tofel because it's covered by it as well. But there are conditions in that. First of all, only if you eat the Iker first and then the Tofel, and when you made the bracha on the Iker, you had in mind that you're also going to eat the Tofel, or even if you didn't specifically have it in mind, but it's something that you normally eat together. So there, that you normally eat together, so then it's considered that you had the das for that. Also, it has to be that you're eating the Tofel together with it, as opposed to you went into a different room, then you would have to make a bracha on the Tofel. The Alter Rebbe adds that actually, that if the Iker is something which anyway you need to make a bracha achrona where you are, if the Iker itself is something which is mezonis or hamotzi or whatever, or her eights, where you have to make the bracha where you are, then getting up and going into another room is not considered gmar soda anyhow, because you anyway have to return to the original place in order to make the bracha achrona, so then going into another room does not necessarily disengage the tofel from the Iker. One common example that comes up as far as Tofel and Iker is, for example, ice cream with an ice cream cone. So the contemporary poskim, and I believe that Rabbanim of Crown Heights have said that it depends really what kind of cone it is. For example, if it's a regular cone where you're only eating it in order that you have something to hold the ice cream, then taka, it's considered a Tofel and you don't make a bracha. And on the other hand, if it's a sugar cone where there you have a reason to eat it by itself, because it itself has a good flavor, then you in fact would make a bracha on it.
If you're not interested in the cone, then why to get a sugar cone? Then you would have gotten
a plain cone, or you would have gotten it, and you would have gotten it in a cup. So the very fact. So if it just comes that way, then maybe you could say because you didn't want it. But still, I mean, the point is, why are you got this particular kind with that kind of cone, so therefore it would get a bracha of its own. But again, as opposed to if the cone itself doesn't really have any chashivas of its own, and it's just there in order to hold the ice cream, then it's considered more of a topple.